The Motherhood Channel is your trusted source to provide in-depth information from UC San Diego experts focused on pregnancy, childbirth, and the first year of life. Visit uctv.tv/motherhood for more.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. Yeah, I'm Iris, and I'm in the Department of Neurosciences. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk, like, what, for 6 seconds for the work that I'm doing. So I have this grant that I just recently got awarded from the Wellcome Care Leap program. And really their whole focus is on Alzheimer's disease prevention in women. And so Alzheimer's disease is a progressive neurodegenerative condition that really impairs your memory and cognition and, like, affects millions of people worldwide. And so what I'm trying to do is develop these accessible, non-invasive, cost-effective tools that can help primary care and neurologists in an early detection of Alzheimer's disease. And so really, to create a tool and deploy it in the clinics and make it accessible here and worldwide, we're kind of starting with standard of care tools. And so what's considered standard of care is very different in a high resource center versus a low resource center versus here versus Latin America versus Europe. And that's really interesting. But we are starting here at UCSD. And diagnosing dementia really does start in primary care. And so usually, like, a patient will report a concern or the family member. And then the primary care, they don't have a lot of time, but they'll, like, order some standard labs. They might do a screening assessment, like an MMSE or a MoCA. And then depending on that, if it's abnormal, then they might go ahead and send the referral to neurology. Here in the U.S., standard of care, or at least here at UCSD in our memory clinic, it depends on your insurance or whatnot, but Medicare at least will reimburse an MRI. Like, do all primary care physicians know what to do with that? Not really, rely on the radiologist, right? And so then what ends up happening is, like, you go ahead and you send the referral to to neurology. And then, so what we're trying to do is I'm working with Amar Mandavi here in the family medicine to really kind of, like, support. Usually they send the referral once someone's abnormal on a cognitive assessment. And the problem with that is that the disease process for Alzheimer's disease starts, like, years before the clinical symptoms. We're talking like 10 years. And so by the time you're sending them to the referral, it's kind of a little late. So now with the anti-amyloid therapies, it's really important to identify those people who are, like, imminent risk, so that, you know, they can actually, if they want to go ahead and start treatments, they can. And this is when they actually qualify for these treatments, right? So it's really trying to work with primary care and neurology to create a tool where we can send better referrals, but also, like, support patients in getting treatments. And so here is the one slide where I have, some of the assessments that I'm looking at. And I chose these because these are the ones that are done in primary, or either in primary care or in the memory clinic. And these are for the anti-amyloid treatments. And so we have the clinical assessment, MMSE, but there's also the MoCA, IHS, which is a brain imaging score. So essentially I got all the brain images and I created a score. We have genetics, APOE, and then PET. And so what I'm showing here on the x-axis is time to conversion. So I modeled these in ADNI. So essentially that's a cool cohort because we had data from 20 years. People were healthy, then they had mild cognitive impairment, and then they went on to have dementia. So I can leverage all of that data. And what you could see here is at the unimodal measures, so the individual measures, the model's pretty good. So I validated it at 5 years. And so what you could see is that these different lines, these different percentiles, you have really good stratification. So in the red and the blue, people are at low risk, of converting to AD from, like, MCI within 5 years. And in the green and in the purple, they're at high risk, right? And so then the other thing I wanted to show is at the bottom is that we have these multimodal measures. And so as you combine these, right, we get better and better at being able to determine who is at high versus low risk of converting. So if you're in this green and purple bin, then you're at imminent risk. We're talking like within the next 5 years. And so what we're trying to do with family medicine is trying to identify, we're trying to actually deploy this in the clinic to support that, what is that imminent risk? And one thing I wanted to show too is like what with the multimodal models is like someone might be with the MMSE or just the IHS, the imaging score, that yellow like in between. But as you add more information, they might change to a different risk bin. So, and we're doing this with different kinds of assessments because like I said, we're trying to deploy this here at UCSD, but we're also working at UCSF and in Latin America, and everybody's doing different things. And so it's a fun project for sure. And so then here, what we're doing is we're starting off with the imaging score. We're actually deploying this. It'll be an Epic. So primary care physicians can actually use this. And we're working with the Memory Clinic with Liz Bevins and James Brewer to be able to like work together and have a dementia care model. Now, what's important is also, and what, you know, most of you here are really interested in it too, is these women specific variables, right? And so Alzheimer's disease affects women like 2 times more than like men. And the whole idea, at least with the Care Leap, is that, you know, women are going through all these biological changes around the same prodromal stage of Alzheimer's disease. And so we're trying to figure out like what is going on at that time that might put women at higher risk for dementia. And my goal is to work with some of those other investigators from the Care Leap to integrate some variables into my models to improve the prediction in women. These models already are doing better in women than men, and I don't know why, but they are. But also one of the things that I'm working on, and I'm internationally, because it's kind of difficult to get these large data sets right to do all these models, we're trying to integrate hormonal and endocrine markers. CARE is really interested in menopause history, like whether or not people are using hormone therapies or like their age of menopause, their reproductive history, and then just in general, their symptom profile. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to add these models or add these variables into the models in order to improve that. And so that's essentially like our second phase. So I'm excited to discuss further with some with you all who are experts in this to kind of determine what might be the best variables. That's it.
Iris, that was so terrific. My question is, in the U.S., as you know, a couple around the world, there's some pretty well phenotyped menopausal transition cohorts that have matured that they should be in the Alzheimer's age range at this point. Do you have collaborations, for example, with like Swan or such folks? Because then it's not just age at menopause, but how we go through menopause as a predictor.
I do not. So that would be excellent. And it's interesting because we have all these cohorts too that we could validate. And blood samples of women from their 40s. And we actually have the samples when they're 40s and we know they go on to have dementia. So it'd be great to be able to work with someone who has that data that we can model and then validate. Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. Yeah.
Actually, Dr. Barbara Perry has a cohort of the mood disorders and, with menopause, and she's here.
Cool.
I can send you this. And Dr. Rebecca Racopene in the radiology, she has a program on imaging for women's health.
Oh, wow.
That can be also potentially leveraged.
And that's the really cool thing about these is that you really can add any model, right, to these because of the way that we just combine them. So, you know, yeah. So I'm really excited about that. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have a question. So I've noticed you're talking about estrogen and progesterone levels of variables. What is that they said is not measurable in prison is androgens. There's a lot of evidence, you know, for women with PCOS, for example, where their cardiometabolic and also neurological symptoms are affected by androgen levels. But it's not just women diagnosed with PCOS, it's women that have low, you know, higher blood much cardiological levels than infants. Again, I think that would be something that would be very interesting to look at in this population because it's completely unexplored.
That would be excellent, yeah. And like I always think like the same way that I did like a brain imaging score where like you get, it's like a feature reduction. I mean, get really fancy. I've done it so many different ways and it's not always best to go do something more fancy, but the combination of all of them, like, what does that look like in women, the combination of them as they get older? Yeah.
I think that the like treatment guidelines for Alzheimer's require or recommend testing when symptoms or cognitive decline is already happening. Mm-hmm. So have you thought about how do you change the treatment guidelines to recommend this testing, maybe in, I'm thinking of like a colonoscopy, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do we get it? So every 5 years, some kind of risk tiering, maybe based on family history or something like that. But how do we get it that standard so that this actually makes a difference?
It is so interesting because you're right. And right now, the amyloid therapies are, there are four people who have MCI already, right? And what that quantifies, like, so how you quantify that, like, even if you have positive for biomarker testing, you're right. Like, if you don't show, like, overt clinical clinical symptoms, it's hard to get it accepted, right, by insurance. And so what we're doing is that it just depends, right? And so, like, it depends. And so, how do you actually, I'm actually going to get on a flight to Norway right after this, because we're talking about policy and changing policy, because the difference is that in Norway, all dementia diagnosis, or I'm sorry, screening is happening in primary care because the memory clinics are overwhelmed. And so, and they, because they have like free, like healthcare, they can't, and it's amyloid, anti-amyloid therapies are expensive. That's not actually reimbursed. So just because it's, you know, they can technically prescribe it, you have to think about who's actually getting it. And so we're actually working with them in Oslo to change policy using some of these models, because we validated it in their like clinical cohorts, to see if we can essentially start thinking about who are those people at the highest risk, right? So then at least we're starting to make changes about like, who are these people who are likely, it's the imminent risk of conversion. Because if you're like gonna convert in 10, 15 years, that's very different than if you're likely to convert in 5 years, and you're more likely to track them if you're gonna, you know, it's easier to track them in 2 to 5 years, right? And same with, in the clinical trials right now with the anti-amyloids, are trying to bring them earlier and earlier, right? But that is the other issue, is like, how do you know who's gonna convert? It's very difficult to have power in a clinical trial when you have to monitor this for like 10, 15 years. And so that's actually one thing we're trying to do. And in Oslo, it just so happens that, you know, it just happens that the way that they're changing dementia care puts us in a privileged position to kind of actually work with them to determine like who would be those individuals who would be getting the anti-amyloid treatment.
One good model for that might be the breast cancer space, because there's like a Gale calculator for breast cancer risk, and now even people with like a certain risk can get prophylactic treatment. Maybe something like that would work.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then the other thing is, like, I've literally went to like 5 different countries in Latin America, but I have collaborators in other places because, you know, I would just have to ensure that these models do generalize to everybody, right? And so it's a fun project and problem to be a part of.
Thank you so much. From UCSD Women's Health Symposium to Oslo.